Consider then how great this Melchizedek was. Even Abraham, the great patriarch of Israel, recognized this by giving him a tenth of what he had taken in battle. Now the law of Moses required that the priests, who are descendants of Levi, must collect a tithe from the rest of the people of Israel, who are also descendants of Abraham. But Melchizedek was not a descendant of Levi, and he collected a tenth from Abraham. And Melchizedek placed a blessing upon Abraham, the one who had already received the promise of God. And without question, the one who has the power to give a blessing is greater than the one who is blessed. The priests who collected tithes are men who die. So Melchizedek is greater than they are because we are told he lives on. In addition, we might say that these Levites who collect the tithe paid a tithe to Melchizedek when their ancestor Abraham paid a tithe to him. For although Levi wasn't born yet, the seed from which he came was in Abraham's body when Melchizedek collected the tithe. So if the priesthood of Levi on which the law was based could have achieved perfection that God intended, why did God need to establish a different priesthood with a priest in the order of Melchizedek instead of the order of Levi and Aaron? This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Did anybody try to do the crossword yet on the bulletin? If you did, you've already learned one thing, right? There's more than one way to spell Melchizedek. Sometimes there's more I's than E's. The original spelling was in Hebrew, which isn't anything like our alphabet. So spelling translation can't be letter for letter science. That says Melchizedek, okay? So how do you spell that? Plus, the original Hebrew had only consonants. And the vowels were implied, and then some priestly scribes added them later. So the little dots and the little lines, those are all like pronunciation helps. So technically, there's a puzzle, and the puzzle is puzzling. And that's why there's a puzzle on your cover that's not even technically possible. But you can try it. Just know you can spell Melchizedek in a couple ways. Technically, the name we are considering is Melchizedek, King of Righteousness, or King of Justice. There's also some question. It could be referring to a Canaanite god, Zedek. So it may mean my king is Zedek. Yipes. You can spell it in a variety of ways, and we understand there is a lot we don't know about the name or who it was or what it means. Also, for those who are visiting today, we have been doing a sporadic study of the Bible book we call Hebrews. So this reflection is very much out of context, and we've examined the first six chapters of Hebrews this year on the irregular Sundays when I have the pulpit. Hebrews is different than most of the other letters in our Bible. That's because it's probably not a letter. We call it an epistle, but it's rather more like a sermon manuscript or transcript. And it probably should be titled, "The Sermon to Some People Probably of Hebrew Ancestry Who Were Exploring Christianity and Getting Discouraged." That's the title. We don't know for sure who wrote it or who heard it, but today we will learn a little bit more about its composition, several chapters in the middle of this sermon of Hebrews that speak about Melchizedek. He was mentioned in chapters 5 and chapter 6, but they were just sermon teasers, coming attractions. Name dropping stuck into the sermon as a preview of things to come. So what do we know about Melchizedek? Sometimes I call him Mel. We first hear about him in the Hebrew Bible way back with Father Abraham, in Genesis. Basically, there was a battle between two groups of allied nations. And Abram, who later gets renamed Abraham, demonstrated some awesome leadership skills and with his allies defeated a group of unsavory kings. And they plundered a lot of stuff. Basically, they took back what had been taken from them. And they freed Abram's relative Lot, who had been kidnapped. And we read that in Genesis 14. Then Genesis 14, 18 to 20 says this, "And Melchizedek, the king of Salem and a priest of God Most High, brought Abram some bread and wine. And Melchizedek blessed Abraham with this blessing. Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who has defeated your enemies for you." And then Abram gave Melchizedek a tenth of all the goods he had recovered. That's what we have in Genesis. In Psalm 110, verse 4, we have this verse. "The Lord has sworn and will not change his mind. You are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek." You've just heard everything there is in the Bible about Melchizedek, except for what's in Hebrews. So how does the book of Hebrews have so much to say about Melchizedek, and where did all this honoring of him come from? Well, there is more. Melissa Bain Sevier, who was here in June for the Synod gathering, does a really nice one-page explanation in the PW upcoming Women's Bible Study, Cloud of Witnesses, the Community of Christ in Hebrews. I think you're going to like this study. And she writes, "Without a doubt, there were additional oral and written traditions at the time of the writing of Hebrews that were not preserved. Jewish and Christian sermons, rabbinical writings, and others. It's probable that some of these sources influenced our author, and then he added his own unique perspective to the tradition surrounding Melchizedek." So there's stuff that we don't have, and there's some stuff that was found fairly recently compared to most of our Bible. Between 1947 and 1956, roughly 870 documents were discovered in 11 caves in and around the Wadi Qumran on the northwest shore of the Dead Sea in the west bank of Israel. The scrolls contained the only known surviving copies of the Old Testament composed before 100 AD, Common Era. So, Old Testament written down by scribes just shortly after the time of Christ. And makes those copies are the oldest copies of the Hebrew Bible that exist to date. They're known as the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, it's a fun trip on the internet to track these sources down. And the most helpful in the Dead Sea Scrolls is a document, a fragment of a manuscript among the Dead Sea Scrolls, and it describes Melchizedek as the leader of God's angels in a war in heaven against the angels of darkness. So you might have heard things like this about the archangel Michael. Well, some places use Melchizedek's name instead of Michael's name. The Dead Sea Scrolls have texts in Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek. And this particular scroll fragment is written in Hebrew, and they think it's dated about 100 years before Christ. I love Wikipedia. There's also a significant amount of Mel's life story in a non-canonical book, that means a book not in our Bible, called 2 Enoch. There's a significant number of these documents that the early church leaders did not feel met the criteria of being appropriately inspired by God for inclusion in the Bible. And some, like 2 Enoch, are considered, get this word, pseudo-apocrypha, okay? Which basically refers to a collection of writings Jewish religious works written 300 BC to 300 AD, usually attributed to somebody long dead before it was written. So Enoch is an Old Testament character. He probably didn't write Enoch, but it's attributed to him. There are lots of these. There's also books called the Apocrypha that are in some Bibles and used by some religious traditions, but that are not in our Bible. So this kind of explains why there's gaps, why there's these isolated characters. And just from an aside, Mel's also mentioned in the Book of Mormon. The Mormon prophet Alma said of him, "Now there were many high priests before him, and there were many afterwards, but none were greater than Melchizedek." So we now understand there's background that we don't have, that we don't use. And then verses 3 and 8 in this Hebrews 7 give us a hint. Melchizedek causes a dilemma to the early Christians. Hebrews 7 says, "There's no record of his father or mother or of any of his ancestors, no beginning or end to his life. He remains a priest forever, resembling the Son of God, and the priests who collected tithes are men who die. So Melchizedek is greater than they are because we are told he lives on." So there were some who believed when Jesus came along with the narrative that he was born of a virgin and then he rose from the tomb, that Jesus was really Melchizedek reincarnated. More yipes. So Hebrews is trying to say that Melchizedek was a cool dude, but he's not Jesus. So in which gospel do we find Melchizedek compared to Jesus? That's kind of a trick question, but not a trick question, because there are no other references to Melchizedek in the New Testament except in Hebrews. It appears then this Hebrew sermon manuscript was especially directed to people maybe in this Qumran community that already had this strong Melchizedek tradition in their religious work. What we have to remember is we don't know everything from this era. And even though we have lots of ancient documents, we don't have a copy of everything written or spoken. Scrolls and scribes and especially oral tradition, which is people telling people stuff, half a world away and 2,000 years ago. No Google search engines, no internet access with a literal World Wide Web. We know what's happening around the world. We have nearly limitless access to scholarship and documents. And the world at the beginning of our common era, what we call 1 CE or 1 AD, that time and place was incredibly isolated. If they wanted to read about Melchizedek, number one, did they know how to read? Number two, was it in a language that they knew? Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek? And they had to find a specific scroll hidden in a specific cave. There probably was not a card catalog. I sat on my couch with my laptop, and I had the text of the Dead Sea Scrolls translated into English in front of me in seconds. You can do that, or you can go exploring in caves and try to find that one scroll. But just because Melchizedek isn't mentioned in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, that doesn't mean there's not a strong gospel message when speaking about him. So we have this beautiful document called Hebrews as part of our Bible. And its aim is to point to Jesus as the unique and superior high priest with the effect of a new hope and a new covenant sealed with the blood of Christ the Lamb, a new agreement between God and people. These words are from a little later in Hebrews 7. Yes, the old requirement about the priesthood was set aside because it was weak and useless. For the law never made anything perfect. But now we have confidence in a better hope, through which we draw near to God. Because Jesus lives forever, his priesthood lasts forever. Therefore, he is able once and forever to save those who come to God through him. He lives forever to intercede with God on their behalf. This is the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. I used a phrase last week, what the scriptures intend to teach us. This lengthy part of Hebrews, talking about Melchizedek, intends to assure that we understand that there is a connection that goes straight to the gospel message. I couldn't read all those chapters today, but hear these from chapter 9. So Christ has now become the high priest over all good things that have come. He has entered that greater, more perfect tabernacle in heaven, which was not made with human hands, not part of this created world. With his own blood, not the blood of goats and calves, he entered the most holy place once for all time and secured our redemption forever. It isn't about Melchizedek. And the main point of all of Hebrews, the New Living Translation even says it that way, chapter 8. Here is the main point. We have a high priest who sat down in the place of honor beside the throne of the majestic God in heaven. The Gospel of John says the same main point. We've been using the New Living Translation because it lessens the linguistic stress and the wordiness of Hebrews and John. For this is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only Son, that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but will have eternal life. Hebrews, it isn't about Melchizedek at all. Thanks be to God.